here we are, folks.
Hey, guys, it is Scotch for Dummies Thursday night.
What's going on,
people? Four dummies in the house.
Man, it's
cheers.
Good to be back. Good to be
cheers,
back.
Cheers, everyone.
I don't know about you all, but I'm thirsty.
Good to see you boys.
I'm thirsty.
Yep.
Man, tasting whiskey is so good, isn't it?
It is. You know, we should figure out how to do that, like decode it.
How do you decode whiskey?
You know, I
and
wish
articulate the flavors.
I wish somebody would have told us 8 years ago when we started this.
Yeah, no kidding. We're in John's basement saying, hey, look at this bottle. This looks good.
That's what you call learning on the job.
It's smooth.
Yeah.
It is smooth. And we're all using these big rocks glasses, you know, things with maybe a big ice stone in it or like those little stainless steel cold things to help cool it down.
You know, when I look back at our experiences, some of the better memories are the B-rated movies we were watching on your big screen TV.
Back in the day, right? When there wasn't a live show.
We all had
a
dart scoring app on our phone so we could play cricket or 501. Remember that?
I still remember that.
Good old days.
Yeah.
But that's a good question, and it's a good topic, and it's something that I think is good for us to review where we are now 8 years later and actually talk about just what that means. What does that mean?
It's interesting because we see comments pretty much weekly, if not daily, people that are just now getting into whiskey tasting in general or something. You see something go by and you're like, oh, I've never had this before. This is my first time ever trying this. Or how do you get these flavor? You know, how do you know how to taste these things?
How about this? The comment of, I know this video is 3 years old, but I'm just now seeing it. This whiskey's really good.
Yes.
You're like,
yes,
what?
It is. Yep. Because there's a constant evolution of people coming in and out of whiskey. And I think we've seen that. I think the people that follow us have seen through that. I mean, we've done it. That's why we're re-reviewing whiskey, because the bottles have changed. And we're doing some blind tastings that, you know, we tasted 8 years ago. If you go do the YouTube algorithm and you pull up Deanston 10 or whatever, and it's an 8-year-old video, you're gonna go, maybe not. But what we're gonna talk about tonight about how to decode those notes and things is good any time of the year, all along, and it will kind of get better as you do it, quite honestly.
Right. So if you were to teach a newbie, someone who's unfamiliar with whiskey, this might be like intro class, right?
Exactly.
This might be the 101.
Yep.
Right.
And we've talked about a lot of these topics before, but let's put it all together and get it out there.
Well, let's have some fun. You guys got something in your glass?
I do.
I have a little something. Is it time to pour new?
Well, I'm going to pour some of this Camps. We were looking at this bottle before the show, and I wanted to start. It's actually a single grain, and that is interesting to me. So
it's
I'm going to pour
really
this.
Done. It's done well.
I'm nice. Glad you poured me a non-peated whiskey. So
I know. Yeah. I totally screwed Sean. I'm like, hey, you want something before the show? And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, oh, you probably don't want something peated because we're going to be tasting some stuff. And I grabbed an American single malt that completely and utterly spaced was peaty because it's not like I know anything about it. So he pours it and he's like, yeah, this is peaty.
So that's actually an interesting...
Like extra peaty.
It's funny, but it does tie in
was
well.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you need a glass?
No.
You're going to make fine. It does tie in well to the conversation, though, because when you're going into a tasting, and I don't try to skip ahead here, but it is important to have a fresh palate, right? You don't want to destroy it. And so, to your point, having a peated whiskey is kind of,
you want some of that?
Setting yourself up for failure.
It smells wonderful.
Agreed.
So we do have 10 things that we're going to talk about, sort of 10 steps. I don't want to say steps because I don't know if you need to do them in order, right? But these are 10 things that you probably need to consider.
You do need to do them.
You kind of need to do them in order, I think.
Okay. And then as we go through them, we're actually going to pour what we think is an average or below average whiskey and what we think is an above average whiskey. We've not had either one of these. I think Sean's had one, the above average one. He brought it. But we're going to go through these steps and we're going to talk our way through them and try to use the suggestions we're saying through the process, right?
Do we want to go through the steps first and then bring out the new whiskey?
Yeah, man. Let's talk our way through this.
Well, sitting in front of me is a bunch of different glasses. So one of the first things that you do when you're going to taste the whiskey and go through that process is you got to pick a glass.
It's important.
So in front of me, we have a wide range. Let me move my tag out of the way so we can look at them and go through them in detail. A lot of these are variations on a similar theme. There's a couple things that we'll talk about later about when to get the aroma of the whiskey and how to taste and things like that. But glasses we have here essentially vary by the shape of the opening relative to the bowl. And so like a big rocks glass like this, it's a big wide opening. It's great for dropping a big piece of ice into for a whiskey that you like with ice. But again, without narrowing that neck down, it doesn't give you a very, it doesn't concentrate the nose of the whiskey. Mm-hmm. So advantage and disadvantage. But what we've got here, we've got some Copita glasses, which are basically little wine glasses, for lack of a better word. Yeah, like a tulip glass. I mean, yeah, guys, please jump in. I'm just going to go through this and
start talking. Yeah,
they basically look like a wine glass that's really narrow, maybe an inch and a half at the top. So it really focuses the aroma and the vapors coming out of the whiskey. Other ones are bigger tulip glasses, and they vary by diameter from about 3 inches, 2.5 inches to an inch and a half. But what they tend to do is they have a kind of a big open bowl with a narrow top, and that allows you to spread the whiskey on the inside surface of the glass, give lots of air access and volatile access to it to allow you to really explore the whiskey. Because quite honestly, what percentage of whiskey flavor is nose?
Probably 90%.
It's a very high percentage. So as you bring it to your nose or bring it to your lips, having all those flavors concentrated right at your nose really super important.
That's why if you're sick or anything like that, it's hard to. You should drink whiskey, but it's hard to smell anything.
Yeah, in other words, there's really no wrong glass here. Whether you do a Copita glass, whether you do a Glencairn glass, whether you do a kind of a squat tulip glass, whatever, it doesn't matter that much.
But at the end of the day, when you not just whiskey, we're talking just liquor and spirits across the board. There's a glass made for a reason for that. For wine, mixed drinks, highballs, there's a shape that's specific to that for a reason, and when it comes to whiskey, it can make a difference. And if you're going to set yourself up for success.
I will say that some of it's marketing and some of it's just personal preference, right?
Yes.
Like what glass is comfortable in your hand? Do you like a heavy glass? Do you like a lighter style glass? Do you like a really small, like some of the really small opening glasses? I don't like to drink out of them because it's kind of a pain, but it's great for nosing,
right?
And so if you just want to get the nose on it, like that little Copita glass, I think would be great for a nosing, but I'm not trying to drink out of it.
Yeah, it's really hard.
It is hard.
You kind of do look pretentious drinking out of it, right? You're like,
yeah, you
get way up. Well, where's
the caveat? The onion glass. So talk about that onion glass that you have.
Yeah. So yeah, I'd noticed them. This was years ago. I'd noticed them.
Cool glass.
Yeah. And it was hard to find. And actually, it was handmade from China of all places. But it's got a very long stem. Looks like a wine glass. But at the top of the stem is just a bowl, like a fish bowl, that then closes at the very top to like a 1 inch. Opening.
Oh my gosh.
So it, you know, you get all these vapors and smells that just circle around in that bowl, and then they come out through that real small opening. It's great for nosing, but yes,
you're not
royal pain in the ass to drink out. Great for swirling because you can't spill it. Right? But and it looks really cool. It's just delicate, and I mean, I'm glad I got it, but I don't drink out of it.
So is it fair to say then, though, if tasting a whiskey is more through the nose? Having something like that really helps give you more flavor versus one that's a normal Glencairn?
So that's a good question. I think when it comes down to glassware, and considering everything that's been said, Sean made some great points too. It actually comes down to the right balance between all of it, right? So what's giving you the proper nose that you want out of it, feels comfortable, and feels good to drink out of, right? I mean, because it's almost like, you know, you're picking a character in D&D. You only have so many points. You get, so do you want a small opening to you? You've got to find the balance for you. This is subjective. The whole topic is subjective, right?
Yeah. And as we go through more topics here, we'll talk about glasses because other glasses are better at looking at visual examination, which is the next topic you go through.
I think you pick a glass
and then you do visual.
I think it's interesting, though, like, because what would you call this glass here? This is like a stem Glencairn.
That's honestly one of my favorites.
I like it because it's fun to hold. It doesn't feel like it's tiny. You can do one of these things, not keep it warm, etc. But to your point, I think I do like the smaller ones. It's kind of nice, especially when you have something that you're going to let sit for a long time that's high ABV because you can still not lose it. It's almost like putting a cap on it.
That's true.
I prefer a little bit bigger diameter because I feel like I can really get in there. Or I can kind of back off a little bit and let it air out naturally versus having to force that. I mean, it really kind of is a funnel. So it also depends on, I think, not only the amount of concentration of nosing, but also kind of your nosing technique. Like how sensitive is your nose? Is it, are you kind of new to smelling whiskey? If you are, I would imagine a bigger glass would be easier because you don't want to be like completely, you know, smash in the face and overwhelmed.
We've gone through all of them, though, guys.
Yeah.
I mean, think about what we started drinking out of 8 years ago, what we were pouring in. And then, you know, we've had some patrons and supporters send glasses. Mm-hmm. I've had a love affair with a bunch of these different glasses. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. We had those at your place.
And Taylor.
So the other thing I like about the really small ones, and we'll wrap this topic up with this if I can. The really small Copeta glasses, they allow you to pour like a half ounce or a third of an ounce of whiskey and still be able to explore it. Because it you don't have this big bowl there's not enough whiskey in there to really coat and look at. So
as we finish it up, the most popular whiskey, or should I say Scotch whiskey, glass is the Glencairn, I would say.
Though. Oh,
I
mean, yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, what's the shape of that? It's basically the tulip with a little bit of a more bulbous bowl at the bottom, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's probably the most common.
A heavy glass base.
Yeah, it does have a heavy base on it. Yeah. But, I mean, that's kind of the go-to for me, because it's easy and it's available. But I tell you what, on this topic, to wrap it up, guys, how do you feel when you're traveling, you go into hotel bar or local bar, and you grab, you're like, yeah, you look at what they got, and the best they got up there is your Balvenie 12. And that's fine. Hey, man, I'm going to take that. That's good. All right, give me a Balvenie. And they come out, and it's this huge rocks glass, and you're like, ah, man, you just ruined the whole experience for me. What are you doing, man?
I mean, you're still going to drink it.
I drank it, I paid for it, but it's just like, yeah.
That was my experience at Edinburgh. So we were at a hotel. It was a new town of Edinburgh, and I take my son across the street to this little basement bar that has this amazing whiskey selection. And we asked for a Balvenie 14, and I got, I don't even remember what I got, but they came out in these huge rock glasses. And I asked for it neat with water on the side.
In Scotland?
In Scotland. And they brought this huge rocks glass with the whiskey in it. I'm like,
well, I knew you're American. Maybe yours are different.
Here's what I will say. I was actually doing a tasting with a guy from France yesterday. And he's from France. He was tasting me on some wines. And he was bitching about the fact that if you go to Paris, depending on where you stay, there'll be like American, like crappy California wines on the wine list in Paris because they're catering to the American audience.
Yeah, that's fair.
And it's probably the same thing. Like they've probably gotten used to like American tourists coming over and being like, I don't understand what this glass is. I need some ice in here and like some Sprite. Do you have some Sprite I can put in this?
Oh my gosh.
You know what I mean?
You would think if I asked for neat with water on the side, I knew what I was
at
doing.
At that point, you should have pulled a Rick James on him and gave him the five fingers.
Slap, whap. What are you doing? Is this all you got?
We're just asking where you need to go to get a decent glass of whiskey.
That'll work too.
That'd have been awesome.
At least you don't have to pay for that one because they're kicking you out, right?
That's fair.
Oh my God. All right. So, topic, the first suggestion of how to decode is choose your glassware, right? So, what's the second one? What's next in line?
I think this one's a very. It's an interesting point, but I'm not sure how serious it is. It's visual examination. Observe the color and clarity of the whiskey. And I think when you talk color, I think there's something to it when you look at it, especially if you know what was matured in, like a sherry cask
or bourbon. As long as it's listed as not, or no color added.
No color added specifically.
Gotta say that.
How important is that, though?
But I will say we had those two Macallan Classic cuts sitting here. And we all knew which one we wanted to try first.
Yeah,
right? The darker one.
The darker one, right?
That's a good point.
And so, I mean, that was our visual examination. We took one look at those two whiskeys and picked the one that was darker. And the one that was lighter was actually better, I thought.
Enjoyed it better, yeah.
But just on a visual examination, which bottle am I going to grab? I'm going for that darker one because it's probably got more sherry flavor in it.
And that's why E150 exists.
Well, so you, to your point, I set two bottles out. You don't know what they are. And you see a gold one, and you see like a coffee one, like Edradour.
Yep.
That is very much an indication of a colored enhancement here that's going to make you go, But I mean, it depends on what you know.
Now is it fair? You know, maybe not. I mean, I've had a lot, like this whiskey that we're drinking right now is delicious, and it's more of a light gold color, pale straw or something like that. So, but I am looking at that, you know, is it cloudy? Is it old? Does it have, you know, I mean, like really old bottles have been sitting around for a while. Is there some cork floating in that thing?
Yeah, well, so it's not so much that you're looking at it visually for the tasting aspect of it. You're looking to try to understand what it might be and have some information, right? You're
seeing. It gives you some additional information.
Yeah. Sure. Well, with that being said, though, it's just note that color can offer clues about casking types. To me, it can if you're educated on it, if you know what that means. But if you don't have the experience on maturations and what different casks can do to a color, that doesn't mean squat to you. It doesn't mean shit.
Yeah, 100%.
But
that's why you're watching us, right?
Well, yeah, I hope so. But you know what? I would also contest that that may be one of the reasons. I don't think it's the reason, but one of the reasons why some distilleries will use colored bottles. Green bottles, right? Because they don't want to put coloring in. They want to be able to say it's natural color, but they don't want you to see that it's light and then be like, oh, this isn't any good because it's not...
Cheap whiskey.
So they put it in a green bottle, you pour it, and you're like, man, this shit was exquisite. Of course you're going to drink it because you already bought it, right?
Yeah, I mean, Ardbeg 10 is that perfect example. It's very light colored, but oh, it's rich.
Right, well, so much.
But you would think it was green.
Yeah.
So again, this one's a sherry cask finished whiskey.
Do you it doesn't look does very sherry cask.
It does.
Right.
I mean, it's got some color to it, but you're automatically going to assume that it was a refill, probably third, maybe fourth refill sherry cask. So you're not going to get a whole lot of maybe sherry flavor out of that. It's just going to be, you know, a little sprinkle.
But we're talking tonight. Our topic is decoding, right, and articulating the flavors. Mm-hmm. So the visual, to your point then, Sean, is important to help with the base foundation of, okay, what am I getting into? Yeah, nose, great. Or first of all, glass. What's the glass I'm getting into? Okay, cool, I want this kind of glass. Then you're going to take a look at the color and say, okay, from what I understand, and most of us, I think, it's fair to say that they're going to read the bottle. They're going to understand what the bottle is and say, okay,
you should.
Bourbon finish. Okay, yeah, I can see this is golden brown. Or sherry oloroso or whatever. It's, you know, dark. Or coffee, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, that doesn't look like coffee to me. This is gold. You know what I'm saying? So you do have some indication on when you're trying to taste something to give you some more clues.
I think I would flip those two steps. I would look at this bottle and decide
which
is probably a lighter sherry. It's probably got some more subtle flavors and components to it. Maybe I want to get a copa glass or something and really get into the nose and try and get to the delicate aspects of that.
You know, it's funny you say that. I honestly do it that way on a regular basis throughout the week. If I'm going to pour something, I will the glass I grab. I got a ton of glasses on a shelf, and sometimes I get really, really small. It's almost like a shot glass, but it's shaped. You know, it's like one of those old times. And when I have that glass in my hand, I'm like, all right, what whiskey am I going to put in this? And based on the glass I drew, that determines what whiskey I'm going to put in because it's going to affect it. I'm like, this is going to be, I can throw this in here, or I don't, it does play a part in the process.
Okay.
That's fair. ABV too, right? I guess a little bit, but...
So, I mean, to Sean's point, visual examination of the color definitely plays a bias in your mind. You see it and you have either a draw to it or an aversion to it, one or the other, you know? And so you have to take that into consideration. And please, if you're doing this and you don't know what you're doing, read the label to see if they've added color because... Yeah, that's tricky, dicky shit.
Your primary information is going to come from the bottle. So read the bottle.
There's actually something else we forgot to talk about visually. Viscosity.
Foiling.
That's step three is swirling it.
Yep.
So you swirl at the whiskey because then you can see legs running down.
And what are legs?
I love them.
Streaks.
I need them.
You know, God, on the glass. I love them.
Differences in thickness of the liquid as it runs down the side of the glass. And so it'll look like a teardrop or a line of whiskey running down the wall.
So is the whiskey running down the glass fast or slow?
Yeah. So there's the speed that it runs down the side. And then what it does, because it's a liquid that likes to be together, it tends to kind of move together into like lines, rivulets as it runs down the side of the glass. And those kinds of rivulets and things will tell you about the viscosity of the liquid, the alcohol content. There's lots of things I've not really done enough work to understand to be able to decipher that well. but you can learn differences about the whiskey, like how much essentially sugar content, or, you know, the how thick and oily the whiskey
sounds
is.
Like by, Dr. Scotch is in the house all of a sudden.
I know. That's a really good topic in the fact what makes. What determines the viscosity of a scotch, of a whiskey?
Oh, that's a great question. That's a really good question. Uh-huh. If only there's someone in the white coat.
Yeah, I don't know.
Hey.
Yeah.
that seems like a still shape slash where they make the cuts kind of thing.
It man. Is. It's it, all
it
that.
Does. You're it, right. It really does.
So it's about alcohol content affects it. It's about how many oils and fats are pulled into the whiskey from the cask. How many fats and oils are pulled over in the distillate. How much do they dilute the whiskey after they pull it out of the barrel? How long does it stay in the barrel? All those kind of things affect that, those other compounds that are in the whiskey that will affect the viscosity or the thickness or the, you know, how oily and things it is.
So we're really looking at that for things like mouthfeel and
it's more information.
Things like that.
More information.
Which honestly, I mean, all that plays into the flavor of it. I mean, the mouthfeel can definitely have something to do with how it tastes.
Oh, for sure. And the lingering factors of the finish and things
absolutely.
Like that as well.
See, that's the thing we're going into here is any one of these topics by itself doesn't tell you about the whiskey.
Right.
But when you layer them together, it gives you a full picture.
Right.
And that's what I think we need to understand. Color tells you some things. The bottle tells you some things. The glass you're using tells you something. Swirling it and the viscosity tells you another thing. And all those together put that picture together in your mind.
So these are all tiles on the Wheel of Fortune puzzle. And then when you flip them all over, all you got to do is read.
Oh,
I'll
goodness.
Take a B. The letter B.
No, it's horrible.
Yeah, we actually get a lot of crap sometimes about... You know, they'll see Sean do this or one of these things, or one of us will swirl it. Like, why are you swirling whiskey? It's like, well, we're not really swirling it for like wine to get flavors. We're really mostly trying to coat the glass and look at the legs and get it some justice.
Give it a little low too. I want to get some oxygen in there. Yeah, I want
to. And it takes you to the next topic number.
What is that?
Swirling
nosing the aroma.
Nose the aroma.
Well, you're swirling the whiskey for the same reasons that you're swirling wine. You
exactly.
are
exactly.
You're agitating it to get more of a nose on your alcohol. You're introducing oxygen into it to change
open it
the,
up.
Yeah, yeah, to open it yeah. up and change the whiskey.
Exactly.
And then I put a cap on it, let it sit for a little bit.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And so the next number four, and we're probably running way behind time.
No,
but
number four is nose
the aroma. So you bring the glass to your nose and you inhale. And every person that drinks whiskey has a different technique for nosing the whiskey and nosing that aroma.
Well, sure. Yeah.
So this is probably a topic we may talk about.
You could do a whole
here.
Topic on nosing whiskey because you could, do you smell the top of the glass? Do you smell the bottom of the glass? Do you use one nostril, both nostrils?
Do you breathe in at the same time?
Yeah.
You
know.
Mouth open, mouth closed.
Mouth open, mouth closed. All those kind of things. And that's going to be a personal preference. But what that does is that's your first, you know, exposure to the nectar that's in there.
Right.
And I like to do kind of like what Sean said, right? Usually what I'll do is swirl around a little bit, take a quick nose, and like, oh, that's nice. Put a cap on, let it sit there. But normally, I'm going to go in about probably half dozen times and smell. And it's going to change a little
bit. It does,
Before I taste it. And most of our reviews, if you watch us, we don't taste it right away. Well, Sean does, but we don't taste it
well,
right away.
But I nose it first. But I want to nose it, and then I taste it because I want to get in there and taste it to see if I'm getting on the nose what I get on the palate. And so I really like to nose it quick, get a taste, get an initial impression of the whiskey, and then I'll go back and nose it several more times to see if the nose has changed after that initial sip or if a lot of it is very consistent. Sometimes you get stuff on the palate that you don't get on the nose or vice versa, and so I like to kind of explore those aspects of it.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it really is an introduction. Like your first introduction to, you know, what is this? Who is this? What's going on in here? To me, that's the first point where I'm like, okay, what am I dealing with? Yeah, I've judged it. I've graded it, you know, with color and swirled it around, looked at the legs. But once I put my nose in, I'm like, okay, now I got an idea who and what you are. And sometimes the ABV just knocked the shit out of you, right? You're like, whoa, goddamn.
and sometimes you know right away, this is a great whiskey.
Yep. Sure. And sometimes, I mean, after doing this for 8 years, how many times, guys, have you gone in and be like, oh, this needs to open up.
I mean, guys,
it's just on the nose. Yeah.
Once a week?
Right? Yeah. If I put a drop or two on this, it's going to be great. Which I want to say, all of these steps need to be repeated once you've added actually up to eight, because nine is add water. But, you know, these things, you repeat these over and over. And I repeat these over and over with a whiskey I've had 1,000 times. Well, I still almost approach it
a little bit every time I drink that same glass.
So we're just now beginning to get into probably the foundation of actually smelling and tasting what we're going to have here. Right now we're leading up to that point, right? Most people are like, oh, I can't wait, try this. And they rush into things. Like, you need to kind of figure out your plan and go through this. And that's, you don't want to just go drink it and go, that's great. Yeah. Take your time with it. Let it sit there. Like Sean said, put a cap on it. Let it kind of stew some more, right? And so after you smell it, so what's some of the things you guys do? Like you mentioned earlier, like different ways you come into your nose, right? Up and down. Take it away. I mean, I kind of do one of these rolling techniques in my nose when I go in there. You know, and I'll come away a little bit. I'll even do a little side thing sometimes where I come out sideways, you know, agitate it some more, come in there, and let it sit some more.
I think sometimes the whiskey plays a decisive role in how I nose it. Because if it's like kind of strong and in your face, I'll be real gentle about like how hard you breathe in. But if it's like a really light grain whiskey and you've got to really take a big, you know, draw through your nose to like get all of the scents in and like really evaluate it because it's just light or floral or whatever, it changes. Like the way I nose the whiskey changes based on that stuff.
There's every now and again, I'll use a technique where right as I'm going up to nose it, I actually blow in the glass from my mouth to push air in to throw the vapors up at my nose.
Oh, so that's some serious
technique. I just puff. I puff into the glass.
Puff, give. Swirl
it. And it literally, it basically swirls the vapor and yeah, I heard it. Yeah. But, you know, sometimes if it's real delicate, you got to go in there and snort it like Uma Thurman in Pulp Fiction when she's hitting that heroin. You know? You just got to really get in there and get after that shit.
We hit you with the needle and get you going.
God damn.
Is that what she says? Right before she hits the floor.
Give me the needle. Yeah, sometimes you do get really, like, I would say the really low ABVs that are especially just bourbon influences. Those are the ones you get in there and go, oh God, I gotta really stick my nose in there
to get
some information. And then sometimes you're like you said, you're like, woo, that is hot. I need to air it out some more because you'll burn your nose up.
Cask strength stuff or heavily peated.
So take your time and try to figure out that first, get past ABV or not. But really, nosing is kind of just what's your first sensation? What's your first impressions? And this is where we get to the point where we're like, we'll give you some techniques. And I think this is probably the most important part of all this stuff, especially with palate and nosing, is it's up to you to get what you think out of this. Right? What's initially coming to mind? It's great to have the bottle. I think the bottles they always do a decent job of kind of giving you a ballpark of flavors. Some of it's marketing.
Yeah, sure.
But at the end of the day, don't go, and I think this is probably where people struggle the most, is like, I can't get that smell. I can't taste the green apple.
Yeah, you can.
You can, but don't worry about that. What are you smelling? Are you smelling shoot? Are you smelling watermelon? Are you smelling
black licorice?
Wacky taffy, purple, but it doesn't matter what it is.
Purple drink, you know, whatever.
Just let go of your mind and don't focus on that and just let your senses do their job.
Yep.
In other words, in the infamous words of waiting, play around with it. See what you come up with.
Well, I mean, it's going to be...
is this movie quote night?
It's personal experience, right? Like the stuff that you taste from your childhood, like burnt toast or, you know, whatever.
Juicy fruit.
It's going to be whatever's in your experience. If you've never had marzipan before, then you're never going to get marzipan because you don't know what it tastes like.
That was us 7 years ago.
Hell yeah, it was. And actually, the whiskey that is above average tonight that we're going to walk through these steps with, literally list marzipan as a note.
No, you shouldn't tell me that. That would have been a good
Easter egg. It's on the box. I'm like, God damn, that's awesome.
So for those of you that don't have a lot of experiences, I was going to say, when do we want to hit the whiskey?
Well, we got to pour it here.
Let's get through the next four steps are all kind
I think they're
of
all
one
kind
step,
of
right?
together.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, so let's hit the next four. I'm going to knock these out. I'm going to list them, and then we can talk about it. So it's going to be taking an initial sip. So you take that sip, you draw it in, you kind of wash it around, and you start to explore the flavor. Now, as part of that, you talk about aeration, whether you kind of like breathe in and things, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. Then you decide whether you want to swallow or spit it. Now,
Don't be a quitter.
This is a PG show, Mark.
No, it's not. We're drinking whiskey.
We typically swallow the whiskey here because we want to feel that finish of the whiskey.
Yeah.
Whereas it rolls back into the back palate of your tongue and in your throat, you want to feel that how it affects all the tissues in your mouth.
Gosh. Well, I'm not saying anything.
Yeah, you know what? I mean,
so this is sipping, aeration, swallowing or spitting, and then feeling that finish of it.
Right. But I can attest, if you're going to an event, right, where there's a whiskey,
yes,
you're spitting. Because
you can't.
I've tried to not be a quitter, and you end up quitting because you're on the floor. Right?
Yes. Well, and your palate gets burnt out. Like, let's be honest. Does. I mean, if you're there to really experience the whiskeys, you can't drink all of them.
No.
You just can't. You're going to burn yourself out. So spitting is, you know, in some instances, not a bad thing. But, you know, for just like general drinking of the whiskey, I feel like you have to drink it to get the experience of the whiskey.
You do get more of an experience if you go ahead and just drink it and swallow, because you do get the finish, the long finish. You get that.
Absolutely. I was just going to say the same thing. I don't think I've ever technically spit. I've always had a small taste of something, maybe a hair more. I'm very careful about, because I know the damage after.
And then pour the rest out.
Yeah, and I pour the rest out. Yeah. I just dump it because dump buckets, right? It's easier to do that because to Andrew's point, you want to appreciate the full flow. And are we talking about that at all? There's a whole flow when you taste whiskey.
Yep.
I mean, to me, the initial nosing and the initial sip kind of go together. And I think I talked about that. Like, I'm trying to compare what I smelled to what I'm getting on my palate as I'm taking that first sip, and how it's progressing as you're letting that roll all the way back on your tongue. Like, what do you get? You have to be very conscious of, you know, is it spicy on the edges of your tongue? Are you getting like vanilla on the roof of your mouth? Like, where are those flavors playing out? Kind of how are they affecting your palate? And as you swallow, does it linger? Does the flavors change as it just kind of sits there and you're hanging out for a little bit? Or is it gone in an instant?
Is it disjointed or does it go together?
Yeah.
And don't be afraid to go back to the nose and go back like, okay, what was that? Do I smell it here?
You absolutely should.
See, all of that sip and the final nose, and that's all has to do with that aeration portion where you breathe in and you breathe out and you look them up online, the different techniques of aspirating the whiskey to bring air through it to allow those flavors to run up into your nasal cavity to get more of those aromas out of them. So taking that sip, I agree with Sean on this. You nose it, you take a sip, and then you nose it again, and it's different.
Yes,
because you've breathed in and you've let you know you've drawn them in and out. The whole sensory palate in your head kind of starts to work together, and that gives you a better representation of the whiskey.
Absolutely, and at that point, I've already made up my mind how I'm going to treat the glass. Because in my mind, after that first nose, first drink of it and finish, sometimes I'm like, all right, this thing is delicate as hell. I've got to slow down. I've got to pay attention to this. Or,
scotch.
Holy balls, this thing's coming in with a punch. I need to let this thing take some time.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm letting the whiskey dictate to me how I should treat it, what I should do with it. That's really what I'm doing.
Yep.
So then once we get through that initial sip, then we're going to the water stage.
Yes.
And to me, I let kind of how the initial tasting went kind of guide that water stage.
So
it's light and delicate.
Yeah. Sure.
You know, maybe just one drop of water and see how it changes the whiskey. Sure. Because it's really seeing what that water does to change the whiskey. Does it bring out different flavors? Does it change the finish? You know, and there's whiskeys that we've had that we thought weren't going to be improved by water that were. And so I think it's advantageous to try it and see what you get.
It's always good to try.
And then there's some bigger cast strength whiskeys or peated stuff that I'm like, man, probably needs like half an ounce of water.
Right.
And then you need to let it sit. You need to swirl it in the glass a little bit and then let it sit so that the water can kind of settle in with the whiskey and kind of let it do its magic.
Yeah. So the magic of that water is really important, because if you know anything about the chemical compounds that are in whiskey, which I know a little bit about, what it does is certain compounds are allowed to vaporize when you add increased water content. And so by adding that water, more things are accessible to your palate, because your palate isn't designed to taste alcohol. It's designed to taste oil and fats and liquids and waters. So as you add water to that, it allows more flavor components to your palate and allows more flavor components to open up into the nose.
And there's a reason why they water down whiskey for competitions.
Yes.
I mean,
it allows to you like to explore what, 30% them more. Or something?
It's like 28.
20.
Yeah, it's in the 20s.
It's low.
So that water is no joke. It is true. Now, depending on the quality of your palate, sometimes when you get a whiskey that's 40% ABV, it may not be the greatest. By adding water to it, it just dilutes it. And you maybe you don't get as much out of it doing it that way, but you still need to try it. Because what you're going to do is you're going to pour like a half ounce pour. You're going to do this process with it. You added a couple drops of water. If you ruined it, you add more whiskey to it.
Yeah,
it's not lose. Like you're going to add take a huge glass of whiskey and like fill it up with water and then say, oh, I wasted all that whiskey. And especially if it's a couple ounce or, you know, a half ounce, just dump it and start over if you need to.
Yeah.
There's a lot of ways to do that. Don't be afraid of wasting your whiskey. If you're trying to explore it.
Right.
Play with
now,
more.
If it's a bottle that, you know, is a staple on your bar, you know, it's something you've had. This is your 10th bottle of it. You don't have to go through that.
No.
You know how you,
you
like
know
to
exactly
drink that
how you
whiskey.
Like it.
But I mean, dude, we've all done it. We've all had the glass in front of us going, man, water's going to kill this. I know water's going to kill it. And you pour the water on it just to see, because you got to do it. And you're like, eh, it's fucking dead.
But I've also had some where I'm like, this is going to kill it. And I'm like, this is really good now.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't even like it before this
happened.
Brought
up some sweetness to it. Yep. It's like, oh, right. Just what it needed. Yep.
I think the key there, though, is water is your friend. And
it
I
is.
Think I think that we've said that for years, and I can't emphasize it enough more. It's like, don't be afraid. Always, always, always try something with water if you've not yet, because it will. Sometimes you get two whiskeys for the price of one. I mean, many times.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, because it's 65% ABV coming in, and you get to water it down to, you know, 50.
Yeah, I mean, it just speeds up the process. If you get a 61% ABV whiskey, and you need to let it sit there for a good hour sometimes for it to waft off the ABV in order to really get down there and get some of that cask maceration or some other things that you're missing, because the ABV is just kicking your ass, punching you in the face. Water speeds that up and gives you that quick, you know, hey, get out of here, ABV. Let me get into the foundation, what we're talking about.
I want
here.
The oils and the right. Yep. Compounds. Yep.
Right. Yep. All right. So that was all the way up to feel and finish.
So let's recap real quick from the beginning. So we've got choose your glassware is number one, visual examination, swirling, nose the aroma, right?
Yeah.
Initial sip. Aeration, right? We talked about those a little bit, swirling. The swallower spit. I mean, that's kind of...
Tonight, you know, we're going to be drinking
You should whiskey. Probably decide that one before that, you take the sip.
Yeah, I think you're probably going to swallow. And then feel the finish?
Feel the finish. Let it roll over your tongue. And so one of you mentioned it before. It's flavor components, but it's also feel. Does it tingle? Does it burn? Does it...
Is it cloying?
Yeah.
Is it oily?
Does it feel sweet? Does it feel, just like you're drinking syrup? All that kind of stuff, that mouth feel is important. It's one more layer. You've seen the color, you've nosed it, you take the initial sip, then you have the finish, and all that creates the palate of a whiskey.
Sometimes the finish is literally seconds and it's gone. Sometimes you can take a sip of whiskey and 5 minutes later, you still have it on your palate.
No,
you're like,
crazy.
Good God, this is a long drink. And that's awesome. But what were you looking for? Is that what you wanted that night now? I don't know.
Yeah. It's one of those things too where it just evolves. And just you have to be patient with it. Sometimes
and
it will
water
evolve.
Will affect it all.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the last two, we've got add a few drops of water, right? We touched
Talk
that.
About that
and, honestly, I think after you've added a few drops of water, you probably need to back up to step three, right?
Don't be afraid to repeat the steps.
Even two.
Multiple
because
times.
Because the water,
the visual.
Depending on if it's chill-filtered or non-chill-filtered.
It can change your clarity.
It could get cloudy, absolutely. Yeah. One of the things I love doing, especially in high ABV whiskeys, if you watch and put it up to light, when you add those first couple drops,
so cool.
It almost looks like a mirage. You actually see the whiskey start swirling, and it gets like a mirage. You can see shit's going on in there.
Yeah, it's
right.
Actually,
chemical reaction.
It's a phenomenon called Schlering.
Schlering.
Well, when you have two different liquids and you start to mix them and there's density differences and it creates this, it's a swirly,
like it.
Schlering
Dr.
effect.
Dr. Scotch is in the house right now.
I get excited right now. He's
Schlering.
It's a new word.
Yeah.
I like it.
Schlering. So the last step is...
Comparative tasting.
Is how to wrap it all up. And mind you, this is definitely subjective.
It is.
All of this is subjective. Well... most of it is subjective.
But comparative tasting, what does comparative tasting mean?
So one of the things we talked about doing this show tonight, we wanted to do some whiskey tastings where we have, we would to go through this. So we talked about it. Now let's actually go through them with a whiskey or two whiskeys.
But we're having,
we tried this. But yeah, we're going to.
Are we
going to
have that plastic?
Keep going. Yeah. Keep going. So So what we're going to do is we're going to have a couple whiskeys. I don't know if we're going to do them in series or do them in parallel because this talks about comparative tasting. I don't know how well it's going to work, but one of the things I talked to these guys about beforehand is to know what a good whiskey is, you have to have bad whiskey. So you have to, in some ways, spend some time with whiskey that maybe isn't your key component, and we're going to. We're going to go through and see what we got here. So
we're choosing glasses.
One of the whiskeys we want to try. This is a plastic handle.
Now, plastic handle.
A Vat 69 Gold.
Of course, Andrew picked this one.
Blended Scotch whiskey.
Vat 69, baby.
You know they make
baby.
Smaller bottles of that.
Do they?
Yes.
Yeah, but you can't even buy one smaller because that was only $5 for that one.
Who's drinking those bottles?
This is the only one I could find is Vat 69. So I got Vat. This Vat 69 was because this was highlighted in Band of Brothers.
Right.
Oh, Vat 69 was.
Not the gold version, but Vat 69.
And they didn't have the plastic handle back then.
No.
So I got this for that. It has been opened. We have drunk a very little bit out of it.
It was a very popular bottle.
It was in the 40s. And it's a classic blended whiskey.
All right.
It's, you know, and so we're going to say, and so my opinion is because it's inexpensive and it's a big bottle.
And it's plastic.
It's probably not great whiskey. It's not going to be one of those high-end whiskeys.
And so, caveat, we have been surprised many times.
Correct. Sure. Sure.
And so this would be one end of the flavor profile. Now, I'm not... I threatened to do Johnny Walker White Walker for this part of it.
No, we said no.
Not doing it.
But
that one is on the end of undrinkable whiskey, which you don't need to taste.
It's cleaning.
So what we're going to say with this one, you're not going to expect all these rich flavors and colors and all this fancy. It's a whiskey that's designed to be blended. It'll have a flavor to it that can add components to a whiskey, you know, a scotch and soda or something like that. Some other flavor components. But it's not designed to be sipped. It's not designed to be, you know, explored and all this kind of stuff.
But going through the steps that we just went through,
we're gonna
evaluate it. We're gonna go through those on this whiskey. Good, bad, or indifferent. This is how you do it. Yep. And you know what? Once you've experienced this level, we got another bottle that we're pretty confident is a higher level.
A different level.
And we'll see what happens there. It's the same process.
So we're kind of skipping step one, choose your glassware, because we just had random... We're choosing one of these glassware.
We randomly selected.
It's even got a pouring thing on it.
So Andrew got a Glencairn. Drew... Okay. You got
I'm going to use this one for the good whiskey.
Let me have that other glass. I don't like the.
Which one you want? This one?
Yeah.
I'm using the same glass for both whiskeys. I'm just going to rinse them out. I'm using a sort of it's kind of a large Glencairn without a base. It doesn't have any stem at all. It's got about a 2-inch opening at the top.
I'm using a Glencairn closet.
It's actually one of the glasses you get from the Peat Monster set. If you went and bought the Peat Monster, I don't know which version of it. But,
oh, is it really?
Yeah, because it's got the Peat Monster. It's a gift set with Peat Monster. Yeah.
I have the really narrow, what did you call this glass?
Copita glass.
Yeah. Copita.
The Copita. The Francis Ford Coppola.
Sean's nervous about the plastic handle with the pork.
I'm not a fan of the
Sean's like,
now.
I haven't touched one of these since college.
Everything about this makes me nervous.
All right, so visual, so step one, visual examination.
Visual, very light. Very colorless.
Very light.
Probably, it doesn't.
So it's lighter in the glass than it is in the bottle. I'll give you that.
So this is a blend of 100% Scotch whiskeys, 40% alcohol by volume.
So what do we know by that?
For a minimum of... 3 years.
It actually has an age. That's Scotch.
It's aged for a minimum of 3 years.
So they could call it Scotch.
Yeah. So really, step one is reading the bottle information.
Yep.
Know what you're getting into. You probably already did that if you bought it.
So this is blended Scotch, which means it has malt whiskey and grain whiskey
in it. Yep.
Okay.
Okay. So we're looking at it gold, light, right?
Very light.
Super light.
Very clear, almost clear, right? Swirling around. It doesn't seem
not
like it's very
viscous at all.
Not a whole lot of...
Not much legs going on.
Sort of runs right down.
Coat in the glass. Yeah.
sounds
like it's very low ABV.
Right? It does. Yeah.
So nose, guys. Next step, nose. Oh, it smells like turpentine.
It smells like young whiskey. Young grain.
I'm going to go with Drew's opinion on that one. It's got a a very paint medicinal cleaning solution quality nose here.
So, So I've nosed it probably. I've nosed it probably 4 or 5 times, and in those 4 or 5 noses, I've gotten a different nose every time, and it's been an evolving nose, right? So right, the very first nose I thought was okay, and I hear Drew say turpentine, right? And then I hear Sean say, I agree. And it got there. It did. It got lighter and thinner and lighter and thinner and almost literally like I was going to use it to take paint off. So right there in my mind, I've already got... You've got an expectation. I'm sorry, so, but I've already been biased towards it. It's hard to come in open-minded now.
I do smell. I'm getting a little bit of more floral now. I mean, it up front when I first took that initial nose, it's a lot.
Yeah. Well, again, you got to let it air out.
But now that it's set in the glass and I've swirled it a little bit, it does have a little bit of a floral nose to it.
So I've hit my nose like sideways in and out. It's very low, so I can get in there and get a nice smell to it. And I'll say there. I still strongly have more of that chemical smell, but there's something, and I mentioned it earlier about don't be afraid to say things. I say I'm known for that. Steamed broccoli is a smell I'm getting on the nose.
So a little vegetal.
I honestly get a little bit of a rose note on it.
Yeah. So one of the things that's really helpful for novices and us alike
is
using a whiskey wheel. So a whiskey aroma wheel that you can get online. You can Google it and find a whiskey wheel and print
one
out
for free.
Because these things are great because they give you the terms that you're looking for. So if I'm thinking a really light whiskey, so for example, on this wheel, in the center, they have the main characters. They have fruity, they have floral, they have grassy, cereal, fainty, which typically are the like a black tea or tobacco. You got peaty, and then you get into some other ones that you get from a cask, like nutty and woody and spicy and winey and things like that. So those are the main characters. And then as you go out the wheel will give you more detail. So under fruity, there's citrus, and then there's lime, lemon, grapefruit, tangerine, orange peel. So those are the kind of things. And you just look through the wheel and you say, so you're talking floral and you got rose. So, that's one of the things, and you can check that on the wheel.
Right.
And then go through that process of finding different flavors.
And if you want to up it from the free wheel that you can print offline, you can buy kits, which those are nice. And they go from anywhere from, 10 to 88, or what you've got is incredible. I mean, and if you want to train yourself to be able to identify smells, aromas that you just don't catch on a daily basis, that's the way to go.
But yep. I've got a buddy that is a pretty good bourbon head, and I was teaching him some scotch stuff, and I pulled out a flavor wheel. He's like, "What the hell is that?" I'm like, "You've never seen a flavor wheel?" He's like, "No." And so I printed it out and showed it to him, and we started doing a couple tasting. He goes, "Oh my God, this is amazing. Like it's like a freaking blueprint."
It is a blueprint.
So, all right, we've done...
Go to the cigarettes now?
Have you done the initial test?
None of your descriptions sound appetizing.
Did you say cigarettes?
This smells like cigarettes and steam broccoli.
Turpentine.
Who wants one?
It smells horrible.
It's a goddamn American Legion. No, I'm kidding.
You're not kidding.
It smells like a BMW.
Oh, my God.
After 2 in the morning.
I mean, have you tasted it, though?
I just taste it. It doesn't taste as bad as it smells to me.
Honestly, I've had bottom tier scotches. I had an expectation going in, right, of some of the modern blends that this isn't that.
No.
It's actually not bad.
It's really pleasant. It's light. There's a little bit of maltiness in it, really light. But I would argue it's predominantly grain.
It is. It's but very I would grainy say on grainy. The nose.
The thing grainy. That I was expecting, especially on the nose too, is that it would be really disjointed, super grainy, cleaning chemical and just kind of off-putting. Because that's what I get on a lot of modern blends like this. And this one is just it's fine. There's nothing off-putting about it. It would be great as a scotch and soda.
It's pretty sweet.
I guess honestly, really nice.
Add a little water to it.
I think your point of blend with a cocktail. I think that's a really good comment
it's
with this.
Perfect.
It's a great
for.
Companion to something else.
Yeah.
I think the only thing I'm really getting is the nose is not pleasant to me, but the palate's not horrible. But if I was to describe anything in the palate, I would just say golden honey.
I get honey and I get a citrus note to it, like a lime or something like that.
I'm following our steps. I add some water. I'm still going back through the swirling, the nosing again, everything else, aeration. Does not have a long finish. It's very short. It's crisp. But it doesn't really... Now, how much was this bottle, you think? 10, 15 bucks?
Probably 25 bucks for a 175.
That's a lot of whiskey for...
It is a lot of whiskey. And again, it's designed to be a mixer. It's not designed for fancy whiskey tastings.
Yeah, water does not help it at all.
It's not bad.
No, but it doesn't hurt it.
I think it hurts it a lot.
Drew will not be having one.
No, that's fine. I am done with my glass.
That's fine.
It's very bland, and I would think the biggest thing here is it's not sippable. I would blend it with something.
Sure, but the that's great. But that wasn't the point. The point was going through the process and getting to there, right?
Exactly.
And we walked all the way through this, and we talked every point, what we got, where, why we did this, what we were getting out of it, the surprises. I mean, and you're gonna get surprised. How many times you get surprised one way or the other? Sometimes you get surprised for the better, and you're like, "Hot damn, man, that shit's really good."
Yep.
And then sometimes you're like, "Oh man, this fell apart."
For real.
And I'm pissed I paid that much money for it.
I kind of wonder what it was like in the 40s, because you know the blend was different. I bet it was actually pretty good.
Well, we've proven that with some of the older 80s blends. I mean, honestly, in the 80s, you know, when blends were the shit, you know?
Yep. They're really good.
They were putting all those good single malts into blends because single malts weren't a thing.
No, exactly. They were putting older whiskey into good their blends taste better.
Right.
Yeah.
So now,
we have a good one?
We do have a good one.
We've got a better one.
Let's wrap this one up. Yeah.
I don't know because I've never had it. Sean has had it.
I had a small sip because I was curious about how it was cask.
All right. So let's talk this one.
Is an Inchmurrin Madeira wood finish. So it's a non-age statement, but it's an interesting finish, which is, I think, why it was purchased. Now, if I read the bottle and the box, right, you know, we start there, there's all kinds of really interesting notes from our perspective, right? Some of them really catch me off guard, and I laugh when I see peach, I see pear, I see marzipan and nutmeg, right? And I'm like, wow, 8 years ago, I didn't know what the fuck marzipan was. And I actually questioned Sean as if he was just making up a word.
And then he literally bought a box of marzipan, a big block. The next and said, here, have this. I'm like, oh, yeah, what?
That is well, you gotta try it. You got to know what you're getting into.
Now I know what that is. But so this is a cool bottle because of its notes. Non-age statement. I don't know what's the ABV here?
46.
So we have to assume
it is non-chill filtered.
Which is awesome. So this is non-chill filtered, 46% ABV.
It's cherry finish, right?
If it's got
Madeira.
Does it have coloring or no?
So
I don't think so.
It doesn't say.
It looks fairly dark.
So the weird thing is what is Madeira wood?
So no, it's a Madeira cask. So Madeira wine.
But they call it Madeira wood finish. So what is that?
I would say it's the same thing.
Well, it's not like they can put you can't.
You can put Madeira cask.
I think it's just their words. Did they just put
a bunch of Madeira sticks or
you
woods?
Can't?
Well, oh, that's right. You can't.
According to the rules.
Maybe they poured it down a Madeira stave on the way to
those little staves you can buy on Amazon.
Honestly, pissing down a freaking nut.
Pour yourself some of that to see what it tastes like.
So I bought this bottle mainly because you don't see a lot of Madeira finishes.
Yeah.
Madeira is an interesting, fairly flavorful wine. It's
full
a fortified
body?
Wine. Yeah. So you're thinking like...
It's a light sweet wine, though.
Yeah,
right?
I mean it can be actually fairly heavy, but like how long did they let this sit in the cask, and how much flavor did it extract?
Ooh.
Right, and so that was mainly why I bought it, and I hadn't had an Inchmurrin, so I thought, you know, why not?
So these are all those layers you're looking at visually. We're looking at the color. We talked about that. But again, reading the box, we're looking at where the distillery is. What did they finish it in? Because all that adds layers to that experience with the whiskey.
We're swirling it. We're nosing it. We're trying the different aspects of it.
You know, the glassware, I'm not going to talk. We got glassware. No. So visual examination, I can argue both sides of the the added color, the E150, right? People are adamant against it. I get it. But if you're a master distiller and your whiskey tastes a certain way, you know it does. You're sitting in your blending house, and this has the wonderful taste that you want to bottle. But you know people associate that taste with a darker whiskey, and yours isn't as dark as what they associate that with. You add the 150 of it because that's what they think it should taste like when it's that color. So they're matching the taste to that color. Or there's so many different reasons.
I guess it depends on the ratio, because we have done a couple of shows where you can taste E150. There is a taste to it, but it has to be a lot. Yeah.
A shit ton of
A lot. Yeah. And I don't know it's not going to be a primary flavor. You're going to taste it in normal coloring. But to the point, let's get back to the tasting. We've done the glass, obviously. So, visual swirling.
So if you look at the legs on this one has much... It's a little
more oily.
It's hard to describe. Yeah, exactly. It's hard to describe. So when you do that, run it up the side of the glass and let it run down. The rivulets that run down, the fingers, that's a better term, that run down the side will tell you some things. And this one has lots of fingers around the glass, whereas the other one didn't really. It just kind of went all down at one. It didn't really like group up into those little...
It's almost like condensation running down a window.
Exactly.
Yeah, this is probably, if I were to grade that on a scale of 1 to 100, the last whiskey we had was like a 10, and this is like a 75.
Yeah, I agree.
I've definitely seen more viscous than this, but it's definitely got legs.
It's got so what does that mean for you? You means you're going to get something with a little bit more thickness when you
thick
come in,
and
right?
Thick and oily.
Meaty.
And yeah.
Probably will have a longer finish, but maybe not.
Possibly. Definitely more mouth coating.
Mouth feel.
Mouth coating.
Yeah. Mouth feel. Absolutely. That's where I was thinking.
So onto the nose, and... I'm immediately getting some fruits.
Sweet fortified wine, yeah.
Like, actually, I get like tangerine and some mango.
Some dates.
It's got like a nutty quality to it.
Yep.
So, you said tangerine, and before you said it, my mind was saying blood orange.
Blood orange is not bad.
I can see that.
Pistachio nuts.
So we're hitting that citrus wheel very strongly here.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So there we are on the wheel, and I think we're all pretty much dialed into that section of the wheel.
We are.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah. The wininess. Right.
Quick initial sip, guys.
Okay.
Oh, that's lovely. Oh, wow. So it's medium finish, decent. Ooh, actually longer finish.
there's a little ABV burn on it. I mean, it hits a little hotter than I was expecting.
What's the ABV like?
46.
I say it's not too high.
It's not high.
It's very, very approachable.
So this is changing a lot as you let it finish and let it roll back.
I gotta be honest, man. To me, the finish matches my nose really well.
Yeah.
It's connected. And I'm not saying it's good or bad.
You mean the palate in general?
So my nose and then the early finish. So what I smelt and what I got on the early finish are damn near identical. I mean, it's literally what I taste is what I expected from the nose. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they're not that way. And that's what we mean by disjointed a lot of times, right? Sometimes, let's say you have six flavors you're going to mix together. Do they blend together well and do they flow? Or is it a bunch of hard edges where it's like this and then that and then this and it doesn't work together? That's disjointed. Right now, I'm liking the matchingness of what I smelt to what I'm tasting.
It's got some complexity to it. It's fruity. It has a little bit of spice to it that I didn't have in the nose. That's there in the palate. I think that this is one that it would be nice to have a little bit more time with it.
Yeah, it needs some water too.
It could use some water.
We'll get there. That's one of the steps.
But off right out of the gate, delicious dram. Mm.
Yeah. So I'm getting. With the palate, I'm getting more of the cereal, kind of the biscuit note in it, the maltiness coming through. Do get the citrus still, but also some of that some ginger spiciness. It kind of
is that the Madeira?
Mouth tingle. I don't know what that is. It may just be the distillate.
Not usually.
It's more sweet, isn't it?
Madeira to me has got like a sweet, nutty palate.
And
to it.
Knows and that's I get where I'm getting that almond, what they call marzipan.
Yeah.
But
and it really, like to me. You really get the Madeira in this.
You do. I mean, agree.
It's so, very prominent.
The question, and this isn't part of the steps, guys. I'm just asking from this whiskey. Madeira is a pretty bold flavor, so it's not something that you want to finish for a long period of time.
I wouldn't
you're not
think
gonna,
so.
You're not going to mature for 12 years Madeira.
Mm-mm. No.
Right. Because, I mean, even the bottle says Madeira finish, and so I'm for my own education purpose, I want to know how long they matured.
Yeah, that needs water.
How long they finished it, right? Because to me, I'm getting the point that you can definitely over finish in Madeira.
This is
sure.
The problem I'm running into with this is there's a lot of alcohol burn in it, and I'm afraid it's hiding a lot of those.
That's
those
water, baby.
The water does. That's exactly why I'm adding
bring
water
that water in.
And not a ton.
Let me ask you though, on feel and finish, did you guys get any cloying? Did you get oily? No. Did you just get middle of the road?
I'd say middle of the road.
Yeah.
It didn't have the.
It's creamy though.
Yeah.
But sure. Almond butter almost.
I'm kind of anxious to see what the water does to it though.
Let's do it. Let's get into water. I'm not going to go a lot because it's only 46%.
Actually, does not hurt it at all. 46%. I think it actually enhances the almond flavor. I put a decent pour of water in mine.
It definitely brings up that nut, nutty flavor.
So on the box, they said marzipan and nutmeg. There you go.
I would say those are two flavors.
Well,
I'm getting
talking about a little bit of spiciness earlier.
Yeah, I'm with Andrew though. I think ginger. I don't really get a whole lot of nutmeg in it.
I don't get nutmeg.
Maybe at the end, at the very end of the finish.
See, this is where a flavor wheel really helps you because it on this wheel, there is a nutmeg leg on the wheel. But around that, there's coriander, there's black pepper, there's cloves, there's ginger. So there's all these things. Does this taste more like nutmeg to me, or does it taste more like coriander?
So,
and you can kind of start thinking.
On the flavor wheel, on the flavor wheel, nutmeg is only separated by ginger, by black pepper.
They're very close.
I mean, it's pretty close.
Yeah, so that's the beauty of having a wheel. It allows you to kind of put those words in your mind to help you think about it.
I don't think water damaged it in any way.
It's so much. It's a delicate, lighter whiskey with the water, and I think I like that.
Let's rehash tonight's episode. So we kind of talked through kind of decoding and articulating flavors, right? And I think the steps that we went through, I think, are fairly generally specific to what we're talking about. And then we just went through two, specifically the last one, really kind of a quick run through of our normal kind of flow, and it does fit into the steps that we discussed.
Absolutely.
Right? Yep. You talked about glassware, which we always kind of, let's be honest, we always go Glencairn. Almost always.
Yeah.
But everything else, we do consistently every single time. So if you're getting into tasting whiskey or really anything, it's kind of important to know some of these steps to really kind of help you articulate some of those things. And at the end of the day, I think it's all subjective, but don't be afraid to just have some wisdom looking at the bottles and having an idea. But don't be afraid to call out things or let your mind kind of come to its own conclusion.
Yep.
Well, one thing, and I don't even know, it wasn't mentioned in here, and it's probably not part of this, and I don't know if you have the ability listening to this or not, but if you do this with a friend. This with a couple friends.
That's a good point.
I you will be amazed at how much further the collective can get than by yourself, because you will be exposed to words and flavors or descriptions of flavors that you knew and have that you've never heard described that way. It brings things out, man. It's so much more fun, and you can get so much further. But these are really the steps. You need to take these things into consideration, and you'll get to a point where you don't think about them. You just do them.
It becomes a habit.
It becomes a normality.
After a couple hundred reviews, we tend to do them by nature.
We don't even think about it anymore. It just happens.
Really?
So. Guys, we're towards the end of the show. I did ask Tom to ask some questions. I don't see anything out there from our live viewers watching this right now. But however, if you're listening to us on podcast or watching us on YouTube on the replay, get some questions, comments, post it below and send us an email at scotchfordummies@gmail.com. We're happy to answer it for you.
Yep,
absolutely. Yeah, if you've got questions, throw them our way. We'd love to address them and get them answered. But fun show, guys. Interesting topic. And we need to continue to dive into some of these topics to open those eyes out there that aren't open.
We're going
to
do it.
Hopefully it helps.
There you go.
Yep.
There we go.
All right. Cheers, man. That was fun.
Yep.
Give me some more of that.
Yeah.
3, 2, 1.